News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 4th of September, Anno Domini 2005, and you lucky people. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And we're just all here doing wonderful and amazing things.
One thing we got to do right off the bat.
Right off the bat.
You know what today is? Well, it's actually a day plus.
What? Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, it's our birthday.
It is our birthday.
We start our 16th year.
Happy we start our 16th year. Our birthdays are all in September. The show's birthday is in September. It's all about September for us.
It's literally thank you, 16 years and
because it was a really cold January.
Yeah. That's exactly it. It's all about New Year's for us, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. 16 years and one day.
Yeah, no kidding. It's pretty amazing. We've done this for 16 years and it's all about you folks. You're the ones who really caused this to happen. You've been our loyal listeners, as we say. It's been great. God bless each and every one of you, and thank you all.
Nobody even brought us a cake.
Nobody brought us a cake. Nobody, there's no band.
There's ice cream in the refrigerator.
Oh, that's all right then. We're good.
Big tubs of vanilla and chocolate ice cream. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's good. No, it's good for us. It's good for us. The first thing I think we'd like to talk about, I had this later in the show, but I think we need to talk about it now, is about Katrina.
Yeah.
Hurricane Katrina. There are a couple of things that you need to be aware of. I know that, God bless Americans. They have opened up their hearts
and
their wallets and their homes and their souls to the people down south who've been hit by this terrible disaster. And it's great. It's great for each and every one of you that you did that.
They showed today into the paper.
Yeah.
To put it more or less in perspective. I mean, to show the damage, just the damage areas.
Yeah.
And they outlined all of Ohio, all of Pennsylvania, and 3/4 of New York State.
Yeah.
Is what it would cover if they take just the damage area and plop it up here for us.
Yep.
And, it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely true.
Over 2.5 states, and then trying to get the people out? Yeah, right.
Right.
They said it was the first time a major U.S. city has been evacuated since the Civil War.
Right, right. It was quite astonishing. But like I said, Americans have opened up their hearts and their homes and their wallets to people. But of course, the scam artists are out there. There's a dark side to everything. The sharks are out, and we need to be careful of that. You're probably going to start seeing, if you haven't seen them all already, a whole lot of emails purporting to be, click here to donate.
Yeah.
Click here to give money. Most of them are phony. They tug at your heartstrings. They want you to click on the link and donate funds. The problem is the victims are never going to see any of the cash.
No, you got to stick to like the American Red Cross, the Salvation Army, various. I know WHAM is involved this past week.
Yep.
They just raised over $1 million for it. And I think they're going to do another concert again this coming week.
Yep.
Things like that where you see a number pop up on the phone, the TV, or you hear on the radio, for the American Cross and Red Cross and the Salvation Army. Those are safe.
Yeah.
But
we
have other emails.
We have a website that we can go to, and Steve will post it up on our site. It's www.FEMA, F-E-M-A, the Federal Emergency Management, or whatever the agency.
Association. .gov. Yeah.
So it's www.FEMA.gov/press/2005/Katrina donations, and that's all one word, .shtm. There's a list of known legitimate charities there, and I can't say enough good about what Americans are doing for the for our own people down south, but I can't say enough bad about the low life scum sucking weasels who are preying on, well, on the good intentions of
the
American
people.
Well,
yeah, there's even some that it's like, hello. There's been a couple already where, you know, a gentleman is sitting there saying, you know, his whole family is, you know, now relocated and they're destitute and yada, yada, yada. And it's like, you know, they lost everything and really tugging at the heartstrings.
Right.
And it's like, wait a minute. Where did you get a computer to even do this up and even think about it? If you're right. that down and out,
right.
that would be the last thing in my mind.
So, folks, just to help us all out. No matter how great an email sounds, don't click on the link. Go to the website we've set up, we're putting up there about FEMA. Go to the FEMA website and pick a known legitimate charity. And for heaven's sake, don't pass those things on. You get those emails, just dump them. Don't pass them on. God is on your side when you do that. Trust me, the 99.99999% of them are phony. Don't get caught. Don't waste your money. God bless you for donating. It's something you definitely should do, but do it to a legitimate site where you know the money will go to do some good. Hit the FEMA site that Steve's put up on our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. And Francis would like us to remind you of that. And
they also have a list of known fraudulent sites, the Benevolence International Foundation in Palo Hills, Illinois, Global Relief Foundation in Bridgeville, Illinois.
Right.
They sound like...
A lot of Illinois places.
Yeah. Well, here's one from Texas, the Holy Land Foundation for Relief and Development in Richardson, Texas.
Right.
So they sound legitimate, and you send them money, and you'll never see it. And
yeah, because they'll never see it. Yeah,
you know, you definitely you still store up riches in heaven when you do that, but the people on earth won't see the money. So make sure you hit a legitimate place in order to do that. I think it was important to get that out before anything else we did. Interestingly enough, there are a couple of other Katrina things that have been going on as well. There's a Linux developer who's been asking for volunteers to help set up public web stations for the victims of Katrina. Basically, he's saying he's going to create, I guess they're like kiosks, in order to be able to put stuff up, little public kiosks that have a special homepage with links to various services. They want to put them up in the affected areas for people. You know, people are standing in line for 15, 20, 30 hours in order to get food and water and medical attention and stuff like that. And he's saying that people who don't have immediate needs of medical attention or whatever can instead go to these sites, click a couple of buttons, and be put in touch with an agency to help them fulfill their needs. And he's looking for volunteers to help that. I heard another one,
over there at the Astrodome, that they literally have hundreds upon thousands of notes. And these folks are trying to sit there and go through all these notes. Somebody that I had heard rumors was going to try to input these and then display them
Somewhere,
get the power up.
Finding relatives.
You know, on the...
The FEMA page has something like that for finding lost relatives.
You know, this way they... Because folks are literally, you know, getting confused, the names and everything else, and trying to locate loved ones.
Well, that's very much like the aftermath of 9/11. I'll tell you what, getting off the subway and seeing walls and walls and walls of names and pictures, the most heart-rending thing I'd ever seen. Listen, we have to take a quick break, but we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and Brendan and Dan, I'm sorry, and me, Nick, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
To Max, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dan Cole.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
There we are. We got everybody in this time. I'm Nick Francesco. Did I say that?
Yeah.
I'll say it again. And give us a call if you're in the 585 area code. It's 222-1180. If you're outside that 585 area code, give us a call on the Choice One toll-free line at 800-295-1180. If you're a Verizon Wireless customer, of course, it's simply star 1180.
That's hard because this is the last weekend before summer.
And the last weekend of summer. The last weekend before fall.
Well, it doesn't officially start until the 21st, but it's like...
Right, yeah, well, but, you know, in terms of...
Right.
Kids are going back to school this week.
Oh, yeah, they're real happy about that.
Oh, yeah, they're all thrilled and delighted. People are already starting back at RIT. Classes officially start Monday.
Oh, really?
And so students were back on campus wandering around. It's very funny to watch them wandering around, bemusedly looking up and trying to figure out where they're supposed to be going, being followed by parents going, "You're sure you know where you're going? Do you have any idea where we are? Where are we supposed to be?"
My granddaughter started school Friday.
Wow.
Yeah. Ironically, she had to go in for one day.
Yeah, I heard a few schools were like that.
It's like... What Greece, the heck?
Greece starts next Thursday, so they go Thursday, Friday, and then have the weekend off.
Well, so does, I think, the city school district. But the problem is you get a calendar that you have to have X number of days, and that tells you when you start.
But
that's
the
way it works.
Before Labor Day?
Yeah, well, that's the way it works. Listen, one thing I wanted to talk about was there's the creative company has a series of products. You know about their Sound Blaster, sound cards, and everything else. They have an MP3 player, the Zen Neon with two E's, Neon with two E's. It looks like somebody turned off the virus scanner at the creative plant because it seems that about 3,700 of the 5 GB Zen Neon shipped with a worm. It's the Wallach.b worm, if anybody cares. Generally speaking, you know, you don't run a lot of unknown applications that are found on your audio MP3, device,
yeah.
And any sort of cursory virus scanning.
What does the worm do? Play the songs backwards?
Thing out. Yeah, right.
And you have to manually click around
Paul
to find
dead.
It.
Dead.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you have to manually click around in the file structure to find it, but some people are like that. Oh, what's that? Click on that. See what it is. Oh, it just infected my computer.
Exactly. So you want to be very careful. It doesn't look like... Right now, it doesn't look like any of them hit the United States. It looks like they're mostly in Japan. But if you've got a Zen Neon, you might want to check to see if it's got an executable program in it. That's a bad thing.
Well, the other big news from Creative, we talked a couple of weeks ago about Microsoft having patented the iPod interface.
Yep.
Creative announced this week that they've been awarded a patent that supersedes everyone else's. They own the iPod and all of the MP3 interfaces and MP3 itself and all this this silly stuff. So now they're going to consider what they're going to do now to make Microsoft and Dell and Apple and everyone else pay them a royalty.
I really hate the fact that, you know, instead of creating good products, people are just suing other people.
Yeah.
Microsoft started it. Maybe Apple started it about 25 years ago.
Well, Creative's big trump card is that their jukebox with their first MP3 player was on sold in the store in September of 2000. So that was a little more than a year before the Apple iPod and other devices that came out. So Creative was first to market, so their patents probably will be valid.
Probably.
It depends on how wide-ranging the patents are. And this has generated a whole lot of mess on the Internet on the United States Patent Office, especially from other countries, people posting about how crazy the patent office is, that if someone else hasn't patented it, you can get it. Doesn't matter if you created it or not. If there's no other patent, you get awarded it. And then they leave it up to the courts to decide if the patent is enforceable or
not. Right,
and
then a couple of weeks ago, we reported that Microsoft patented the smiley face.
Yeah.
Yep.
The smiley. You can't put smileys in your email now without paying Microsoft money. I've never used smileys. I've never thought of them as intelligent or useful things. I'm going to start using them constantly now, and the heck with everybody. We have Steve on the line from Webster, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Hey, first of all, that worm could help a lot of marriage situations because, as I understand it, if you do play country music backwards, you get your dog back and your car back and your house back.
Cool!
And your gun back. And
and your wife comes back and your dog is raised from the dead. Exactly.
Yeah.
Very nice, Steve.
Maybe I don't want that worm. Privacy is a nice thing. Hey, question. I've got a relatively new Dell 4700 Dimension with a DVD reader and a DVD writer that's supposed to also write CDs. And I have not been successful at getting the ability to burn CDs. I always get a message saying that there's no blank media in there, even
because
though...
Tend to imagine you're using Nero to burn?
Sonic.
Well, usually in most of them, when it comes to the burning and what you're going to be burning, it's usually that's where a lot of folks mess up, and I know this happens in Nero also, is you've literally got to say that you're burning a CD this time because the default is DVD.
And sometimes it depends on what brand media you're using. Some brands don't like some drives. It's also possible...
I've tried four different brands. But what, is there a setting to change, and where do you set it?
You got to change it because it defaults to DVD because that's what the drive is. So you have to go in and for that one session select that you're going to burn a CD. Now, I know this is scary, but there's a thing called this help session in the program.
You got to read the help.
You're going to
listen,
have to
we got
to
take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and Dan and Brendan. It's the news, and then it's back to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
With Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dan Cole. I'm Brendan Cooper.
And this is Salma. Dan and Brendan are both working the controls today. When Rob is not here, it clearly takes two guys to handle the board. That's how incredible Rob really is when you get right down
now,
to it.
Now, let's not go too much. I mean, then Rob's
not here. He's not listening.
Yeah, but
he's,
his head won't fit through the door.
Yeah,
if word
the
gets out, some of his loyal listeners could be listening and, oh, they missed you. And then also we got to deal with this huge inflated head.
Rob who?
I don't know.
Yeah. See, that's just it. All right. Here we go. We're back.
Well, let's finish up a little bit with the Steve from Webster with the CD problem. As we started mentioning before the break, it could be the brand of media.
Most likely, though, what I've seen out 99% of the time, because the program defaults. The program actually
it
defaults.
Assumes you're going to do DVD. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you try to go to do CDs, it gets all confused. It happens with me with Nero. All the time.
It's also possible, even though it's a brand new drive, it's possible that the CD laser isn't working right.
They are two separate lasers.
Two separate lasers, one for CD and one for DVD. So even though it reads and writes DVDs fine, being able to not burn DVDs could be CDs, the CD burning laser. So it's something to check out there, too.
Right. The first thing to check is to make sure he's told it, I'm burning a CD this time, not a DVD.
I've ruined a couple good.
They're
great coasters.
Especially since the drive is telling him there's no blank CD media. If he really is using CD media and the drive says no CD media, then it's probably something in the read-write CD laser.
Right. But if it says no DVD media, that means he set it to the wrong thing.
If it says no media, then you're really out of luck.
Right.
Because you don't know what it's looking for.
All right, our next caller is Melissa from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Melissa. How are you today?
Good.
What's your question? You have a modem question.
I have a Dell computer with Windows 2000 XP, and I bought a modem for it.
Yeah?
The best data, 56K modem. Installed it. It initialized. Everything looked fine, but it doesn't recognize having the phone line, and I keep getting a DLL link error message. So we took it back to Circuit City. They put another one in because they were having problems with this 56K modem out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Put a different one in, and it still initializes, recognizes a modem, but it can't link.
Here's what I've run into. Now, how much, if you don't mind me asking, how much did you pay for the modem?
Did it cost?
There's two types of modems.
Yeah, because there's
a hard modem and a soft modem.
Yeah, and soft modems, if it's a software modem, what they call a software modem, they have a big-time problem connecting and staying connected.
It relies on your computer software to do some of the modem functions.
The error checking. The minute you go to a hardware modem, in other words, the actual modem does the error checking, it runs a lot better. Software modems are a lot cheaper. You know, you can get them for like $20 or less.
That's what this was.
And if you go to a hardware modem, I just had a machine.
Which isn't that much more expensive.
No, you're going up to $25.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. No, literally, $5 difference between the two. And it's like, you know, if you want to stay connected and have less problems, make sure it is a hardware modem. Like you say, it's a few bucks more, but you'll have a lot less problems.
The other thing to take a look at is on the back of the modem, there's often two telephone jacks.
Okay.
One jack is to plug into the wall, and one jack is to plug an actual telephone into.
Yeah, it says line.
Sometimes it's, it says line or wall, and the other one will say phone or have a little picture of a telephone handset. If you have those backwards, the modem can't connect to the internet because it turns off the telephone line. So that you don't pick up your telephone during a modem call.
Right. What it was designed for was in case you were in an off, you know, say in your little office there, and there's only one phone and only one outlet in that room. Well, you'd run the line from the wall into the back of the in part of the modem and then hook your phone on the other side of that connector. So if you weren't online, you could still use the phone. But the minute you start to use the modem, it shuts off that phone side of it.
Okay.
The other thing you should try is to actually plug a handset, a regular phone, into the back of the modem in the other jack. And not when you're trying to connect, but just regular, pick up the phone and see if you get a dial tone.
Okay.
If you don't, then either you've got those lines in backwards or there's something wrong with the modem.
Okay.
So try those things.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. All right. Our next caller is Pat from Irondequoit, who has a brand new PC. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
Hi. I have a new laptop, and I'm no spring chicken, so I'm not up on a lot of this computer stuff. But when the mouse on is extremely sensitive. Whenever I just happen to pass over something, it opens up that page, and it's a real nuisance because I have to close that and try to get back to where I am. And is there some way of making the mouse so it isn't so sensitive? I also have
another question. If you go to Start, you go into Settings and into the Control Panel.
Yep.
You're going to see a little thing there for the mouse.
Uh-huh.
You double-click on that. And in there, you can control the sensitivity, how fast you want it to respond when you double-click on something, whether you want it to see the what they call the tracking. In other words, it moves like a little arrow, and you can see like shadows of the arrow as you're moving around, so it's easier to find. And you can also change the size. There's where you want to change it.
What do I change? I found that, but I don't know what to change.
The sensitivity, the clicking sensitivity.
Okay.
There's a slide bar.
There's clicking sensitivity and there's tracking sensitivity, so you may need to tweak each of those individually.
You can play around with them, and you won't mess up the machine.
Okay, that was my concern.
No, you won't mess it up.
You may make it faster, so then you slide it back the other way to make it slower.
If you swing it to the left, it'll always lessen it.
It'll make it slower, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm afraid we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the scourge of the MPAA striking again, instilling fear into the hearts and minds of motion picture executives everywhere. Find out who and why after the break when we come back with more Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
WHAM's answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Sound Bites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dan Cole.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And this is Soundbite. You can get closer to the mic if you like, Brendan. That's allowed. It's okay.
We've got to hear that commercial changed.
What?
Over 16 years.
It is over 16 years. I told you I'd tell you about the MPAA, the scourge of the MPAA. There's this young Norwegian programmer named DVD John, he calls himself, and he broke the DVD encryption code so that Linux people could play their DVDs.
Well, specifically
on their Linux
so he could play DVDs on his Linux box.
Right,
like any good Linux programmer, he posted the code so everyone could do it.
Right, exactly. Yep. And now he has broken the encryption code on Windows Media Player. Windows, of course, has its own media player, and they have an encryption code that mostly is designed to prevent you from playing the file anywhere that they don't think you should. It's called the media digital rights management. He didn't break that. He did not break the digital rights management. He only broke the encryption code to let you play Windows media files on your Linux box. Of course, he's already been sued. He's already been hated and reviled and everything else. This is in order to see the videos. And all he wants to do is play Windows Media Files. Because, you know, a lot of places...
On his own computer.
His own computer. A lot of places only provide Windows Media Files. WMA files.
Yeah, we get this question a lot. How do I play media on the internet? Well, you need the player, and the three most common formats are Windows Media, Real Media, and QuickTime Media. And you need three players, depending on which site. And some sites only give you one choice.
And he wasn't doing this for profit or anything else? Or
he just wanted to play the video.
Yeah, I mean, hello?
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, the MPAA believes that it's a bad thing and that files will immediately be pirated, and
they already are.
They already are.
Yeah, hello.
Well, there was this big meeting. The movie industry got together and had a big meeting, and they had commissioned a report, a study of why they were losing money, and they have been saying all along it's because of piracy and because of people stealing their stuff and not paying for it. The unfortunately for them, the committee came back and said the main reason you guys are losing money is that your movies suck.
This is a really bad summer blockbuster season.
What summer blockbusters?
You know, Fantastic Four, maybe, you know, for the comic purists.
There were some movies I enjoyed, but they weren't must-see, got-to-get-out-of-the-house-right-now.
Or see them several times.
Right.
One I was disappointed in was that Tom Hanks one where he's in the terminal. I think it's called Terminal.
Terminal, and that's based on a true story.
And that
guy got stuck
like,
at the Paris airport for 10 years.
When it ended, it was like, you know, I'm glad I didn't go pay money to see this thing.
See, we go to the Dollar Theater. You know, you spend a Saturday at the Dollar Theater. You still pay the $7 you do for a movie, but you can see seven movies.
Right. Well, but that's the big thing. You know, a lot of people nowadays are not willing to spend, you know, $8 or $10 for a movie that they don't know is going to be any good.
Yeah.
So much stuff is junk out there that that people are just not willing to see it. And that's what the movie industry is saying. They themselves now admit that the main reason they're losing money is people just don't want to spend $10 to see what could be a lousy film.
Because usually the trailers are the best part, and you've seen it.
Well, how many times
TV?
Have you sat through a trailer and said, yeah, I've just seen the best part of this movie? Yeah.
And it's not actually that they're losing money. They're just not making as much as they think they should.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not actually losing money. Movie revenues are up over last year, just not as much as they wanted.
Right. So you're right. It's not that they aren't making money. They're not making enough money. All right, we're going to go to the phones again, and we have Steve from Greece on the line. He has an iPod question. Steve, what's your question?
Hi. I have an iPod, and I got like a whole bunch of books on it, and I was trying to organize it because it's kind of hard to keep track of everything. And I created some new playlists in the iTunes software. And I can't get those folders to actually go into the iPod.
When you synchronize your iPod, there are two options. You can do an automatic sync where every playlist and every song in your library gets moved into the iPod. There's also a manual sync where only certain songs and certain playlists get moved in. And as people have gotten bigger and bigger libraries where everything won't fit on the iPod anymore. We used to say 1,000 songs. I'll never fill my iPod.
Yeah.
Now my 20-gig iPod is full.
Right.
So it may be that your manual settings don't include those new playlists you want. When you plug in your iPod, there's a new little button in the bottom right corner of iTunes for the iPod preferences. And that controls which songs and which playlists are automatically or manually moved over into the iPod itself. So that's a place. Check those preferences and make sure those new playlists that you've created are selected to transfer.
I have to say that for all that Apple is so good at user interface, the iTunes product is not really terribly intuitive if you're not in automatic mode.
Right.
It really isn't. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've done the same thing where I say, okay, this is what I want, and then I'm thinking, that didn't go anywhere. Oh, I got to push this button. I got to pick this.
You either drag it yourself
from
the iTunes window into the iPod icon, or you can set up an automatic for certain playlists, and not automatic every playlist
right.
if it doesn't fit.
Right. Well, I actually got the files to go into the different folders I wanted. The thing is, the folders just won't go into the iPod. It's weird.
Well, that's where you have to drag them
not
into the iPod icon.
Right. You have
I tried dragging them in, and it won't drop it in for some reason. It just, you know, it comes up with the grayed out letters or whatever, and that means you're
set to an automatic mode that doesn't let you manually.
Steve,
drag.
Hang on the line. We'll talk to you in a couple of minutes when we come back from these important commercial breaks with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, Brendan Cooper, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's the computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this is Soundbites. We had Steve on the line who still has an iPod question, but we also have Sal from Fairport on the line who has an iPod answer. Sal, are you there? Sal? Hello, Sal. Hello. Are you there, Sal?
I think we got Steve. Let's see if we can get Sal. There we go. A couple of things that Sal is probably going to suggest, especially for books, since you said you're downloading audiobooks, you need to make sure you have the latest iTunes, which is 4.9. And the latest version of iTunes itself, which is 4.9, and the latest version of the iPod software, which is June 26th. And you can go to Apple and download those for your iPod and for your computer.
Sal, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's hear your answer.
Well, he might want to look in his preferences under the iPod icon. Under preferences, he's got three choices. It's either automatically update all playlists, update only selected playlists, or manually update.
And the fact that he can't drag a certain song.
He's not on manual.
He's not on manual. So
he's on one of the two automatics.
And since it isn't loading all his songs, he's on selected. Selected automatic.
Yeah. So he's got to go into
the songs.
Certain...
And you can't drag the folder into the actual iPod when you, you know.
Right. You, no,
yeah, that won't
that's
work.
Right. You cannot drag a folder into the iPod. You have to drag songs or a playlist.
Yeah. What he'll need to do is go into the update selected playlist. And go
what
down
I mean
there
by folder is actually a playlist. I'm trying to drag the playlist into the iPod, and it won't go.
No, that won't go. You've got to go into your preferences and do that.
Oh, okay.
And set that up. Thank you. Thank you very much, Sal. Sure. I love it when people call in and answer the questions for us.
Yep.
And that's my favorite part of the show, I have to say. Our next caller is Alan from Pittsford, New York, who's got a question about Google Earth.
Google Earth.
Welcome, Alan.
Hello there. Yes, it's an addictive little program.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if anyone knew, because I looked around on the internet, why only parts of the world are in high resolution. States like Massachusetts, the entire state is in high resolution. Is there politics going on?
Well, first, let's talk a little bit about what Google Earth is. For everybody who hasn't been there, you really, really, really need to go. It's so cool. Google Earth, if you go to earth.google.com, that's earth.google.com, and Steve's putting that up on our website. It's a photographic high def map of the Earth, and it combines satellite imagery, some maps, and Google's own power to do stuff. You can tilt and rotate the view to sort of see 3D terrain and stuff. And the answer to your question is that they haven't covered the whole Earth yet. Some places have simply been covered better than others, and they're
depending on which satellite they're using.
Right.
Well, certain things are blacked out, like the village of Pittsburgh is in low resolution, nicely squared out.
Right.
Little pieces of Monroe County are just missing for some reason.
They haven't they haven't had a reason to photograph them yet. So there are several companies, including one in Victor, that are adding more and more photographs. In addition to satellite photographs, they have planes giving a 45-degree photograph rather than a straight down like a satellite is. So it's eventually the rest of the Earth will be covered.
Right. The big thing is it's early days yet. Google has gotten these data from various places, and they just haven't covered the Earth yet. It's a big place.
Did you know why MapQuest took off their satellite view?
Yeah. No, did they?
Yes.
I have to tell you the truth, to be completely honest with you, I haven't been to MapQuest in like forever.
Well, Google bought one of the major satellite companies, was it the Keyhole satellite?
Yeah.
And so maybe they're starting to license it now to the other companies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that may well be it. Listen, we got to go. It's time for the news. We'll be back in just a little while with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, Brendan Cooper, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. And when we come back, I'll talk about tech jobs. They were up in August, mostly, which is good news for most of our listeners. After the news, we'll tell you which ones were up when we come back with more Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Longest running computer show, Sound Bites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line at 1-800-295-1180 or *1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dan Cole.
And I'm Brendan Cooper.
And this is, it's gotten crowded in this tiny little booth. You have to understand, the booth we're in is approximately half the size of a phone booth. There are five of us crowded in here right now, and we're just really, really, really friendly.
That's because Joan and Joan
and the other lady just left, and there's only five of us in here now.
So we're down to five.
Down to five, so I don't know whose elbow that is, but could you move it? It's not at all comfortable. We'll get back to the phone shortly. We have emails to read, but before we do that, I told you before we took the break that tech jobs were mostly up in August. Most of the tech industry was up.
Where?
Not way up.
We're
about 1,900 manufacturing jobs in computer and electronic products, about 1,000 jobs in computer systems design and related services. So my question to you guys is this a good time to get into the computer industry? And what about the outsourcing problem?
Yeah, well, that's one thing. Matter of fact, in that vein, evidently Dell has learned a very hard lesson.
A very hard lesson.
Well, as you know, they shipped their tech support over to India. Well, they finally are listening to their customers. From what I understand, it has now moved back to the U.S.
Some of it, yeah.
Yeah, because so many folks were just getting very upset with Dell for this move, you know, taking jobs out of the U.S. It's a U.S.-based company. Keep it here. And from what I understand, it's a lot better and helping out.
You know, no offense to the Indian people, but no matter how many English lessons you take, it's still tricky talking technical information with people.
Yeah.
Well, it is because people expect, you know, this is a Texas-based company. They expect to hear, at best, a Texas accent.
Well, yeah, it's someone from the Northeast tries to call Texas, you're going to have a hard time understanding them anyway.
Exactly.
Well, Apple did this years ago. They had one of their, I think, level 2 tech support was in Ireland.
Yeah, they have a huge manufacturing plant in Cork, Ireland.
Right. And so often you would get... But, you know, as Americans, we like Irish accents.
Yeah.
We like Irish accents. We like Australian accents. We like to hear them. So when somebody...
Or Canadian.
So when somebody speaks them, we like to hear them. But, you know, is this... The real question, is this a good time to get into the tech industry? Do we think this is... You know, jobs were up, but it was like 1,000 jobs. Like 20... Like less than 3,000 jobs all across the nation.
I wonder, you know, around here... Maybe in other parts of the country, but right now we've been seeing other, you know, with the massive layoffs and everything else, other computer shops. There's been a couple around that we were talking about just this past week.
Yep.
Storefronts that have literally closed the doors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it depends on what kind of tech job.
Yeah.
You know, phone desk versus repair versus, you know, sales. There's all kinds of different kinds of tech jobs.
Yeah.
Well, right. And,
mention that Jesse Group is hiring.
Phone
desk and sales and technical, our new office, 7716 Victor Menden Road in Victor.
It's good that you're hiring. Yeah. And that's the big thing. If you've got actual tech support, if you've got, you know, I need to get my hands in this machine and fix it, there's no way that's ever going to be outsourced.
No.
It's got to happen right here, and it's got to happen right now. And You know, people are lamenting the death of the big industries, both in Rochester and nationwide. But what that does is open up the door for a lot of small entrepreneurs. And yep. every one of them, whether they can afford it right now or not, at some point are going to need technical support. And that's where guys like you two come in,
yep.
where you can go into a small company and set them up and do their networking and provide their stuff and then support them.
I'm going this coming week to one company, just that. Gentleman got laid off at one position and is starting up another business in land management.
We've seen that in cycles, that as a company is growing, they start out too small to be able to afford their own full-time tech staff, so we help them there. And then they grow and we lose our gig as they do have
full-time staff.
And then they grow even more, but not enough to have two tech people, so we're back in.
And that's how it works. And I think that in the long run, all of these small companies are going to realize the importance of having a person on staff who can do hardware and software and help desk and all of that stuff. So I personally believe the era of the generalist is coming back.
Like you said, is it coming back in this area? Maybe to the limited degree, yes, it is. But again, like we said, it might be specific to a particular area. Like Steve was saying, a company's growing that, and they might just need somebody part-time to do their IT support, or maybe it's a weekly thing. But, or there's others that are going to need full-time.
I know several people who are now making a living doing part-time tech support for five or six companies, and that's what they do. And then Monday's here, Tuesday's there, Wednesday's there. And they come in and do whatever needs to be done, and that's the deal.
And the person's going to have to be willing to be flexible.
Right.
Whereas, if they were with a big company where, no, sorry, that was my job, some of that attitude would have to change that, you're going to have to be more diverse. And, I'll take a look at that.
Yeah, that's not my job. Doesn't cut it anymore.
Yeah right, exactly.
Yeah, because that can, change very drastically. So, yeah, you got to be willing to bend with it.
Right.
And I think there is a chance for some folks.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's is it the good news that it used to be? No. But is it better than bad news?
The key thing is what they got to do is do their homework. They're going to have to look into what they want to get into and really do some research to see if there's a niche for that.
Right.
Because it's great to say, I want to sell widgets.
Right.
And nobody around that wants to do widgets.
Right, right.
You're all dressed up, no place to go.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I completely agree. But for those of you, I know a lot of people, a lot of our listeners are tech people. A number of them have been out of work for a while. But, I honestly think that if you're willing to bend a little and do the flexible stuff and be a little innovative, you'll be able to find a niche shortly. I think it's loosening up. Our next caller is Joel from Rochester, New York, with a Windows issue. There's a shocker. Hi, Joel. What's your question?
Yes. Can you hear me okay? I'm on a payphone. I don't know how well the integrity of the line is.
It's fair. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm a Windows robot programmer, and what I do is have the Windows control app, the robot control Windows application.
Sure.
And like a glue that binds all the applications
Got it.
Together. So I go to a DOS window through robot control, and I have what you call a text links browser, which exports data or, text data from web pages and exports it to a file. And then I close the window and go to other applications.
Right.
The reason I close the window is because the robot can understand a closed window very easily, where it's a little bit more tricky for it to recognize the status of an open window vacillating back and forth.
Sure. So what's your question?
The problem I have is, is that it seems I have a degradation of my Windows performance by just the act of closing and opening this DOS window.
Yes.
So what happened is I took everything out of my system tray, and it seemed to help.
But not a lot. Here's your problem.
What I'm wondering is there a utility or something that I can do?
Yes, there is. Here's your problem, Joel. When you open and close a window, there's what's called a memory leak in Windows.
I've heard of that.
It's been there forever. What happens is when you open up a window, Microsoft is supposed to allocate a certain amount of resource to that window, and then when you close it, it's supposed to give it back to the operating system.
But the problem is they don't.
They don't give it all back.
Okay.
So every once in a while, you have to run garbage collection. And that's really all it is. That's all you have to do to solve that problem. Now, as to exactly how you do that in whatever language you're running, I don't know, but I'm sure you can figure that out. But that's what you have to do after every second, third, fifth, after every window. Why not?
Okay, let me ask real fast. Is there a utility, or like shareware or something you buy that does garbage collection?
There are a couple that are available on the net, and you can certainly do a Google search for them.
Okay.
But garbage collection is also built into the operating system. You just have to call it.
Oh, okay. So I have to look up on how to call the garbage collection.
There you go.
Very good. Thank you for all your help.
Thank you, Joel, and good luck. There's a loyal listener. Guy's on a payphone. I like that. You gotta admit that. That's good. Our next caller is Keith from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
Hi. How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Oh, good. Thanks. I do everything you say. I run the Dance the Tango. I've got
everything we say.
Well,
reach into your wallet. No, go ahead.
Yeah. My address is. Yeah.
I've got. Just for my systems, I've got a Windows 98 on a desktop. I've got three laptops with XP Home. They're networked with a hard line, and I use Frontier DSL. Now,
I've noticed
that since I downloaded the new 1.4 SpyBot, every time I run a check, I'm getting, and I just did it before I called you, and I'm getting, I'm going to read the names off the list of problems that are coming up. Advertising.com, Avenue A Incorporated, mm-hmm. Double Click.
Yeah.
And I also have my, under Internet options, I have my cookies under prompt, so that it's supposed to come up and ask me if I want to accept that cookie or not, and I always refuse it.
All right, here's a couple of questions. First, are you running the entire Security Tango?
Yes, I am, and I'm also using Mozilla Firefox and Thunderbird.
When you run the Tango, are you following every single step, putting it in safe mode, all of that stuff?
Yes.
Okay, the second thing you need to do is when you run the Tango, disconnect your other machines. What it sounds like is they're reinfecting each other.
Oh, okay. So by having them networked, they're just going back and forth.
In the other computer while you're working
exactly.
on that.
Exactly. So you need to disconnect all four of them. You know, follow the Tango, download all the stuff ahead of time, disconnect.
Just unhook the hub.
Right. But he's got to download all the files first. Yeah,
no,
then disconnect the hub and you're on your way. Disconnect all the machines from the hub and run the Tango that way. That's the place I'd start if that doesn't work, then
there are a lot of spyware that are really, really hard to remove. They embed themselves really deeply. Cool web
in
search
the restore
is
files.
A big one. Yeah, make sure you turn off your restore. So we should start adding CW Shredder to the Tango.
Yeah, we should. Yeah. I keep forgetting to do that.
Cool web search is so hard to get rid of.
But do that and also download CW Shredder, which I believe is on our. We have a link to that, and I'll make sure I change the Tango to
CW Shredder.
CW Shredder.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys.
Good luck, Keith.
Bye-bye.
Our next caller, Mary Ellen from Honeyoy, New York.
Hello.
Welcome, Mary Ellen.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I try to get into my email.
Right.
Okay. And every time when I log in, password's right, name's right, it won't connect.
What are you using for email?
I'm on USA DataNet.
Okay, that's good. And what program do you use to get to your mail? Are you doing it through the web or through?
The web.
Okay, the web.
And dial up?
Yes.
And what's the error message you get?
Well, it starts to go in, and then it just goes back to login. And then this has been happening since yesterday morning, and I have a deadline I have to meet where I have to email some stuff, and I started yesterday morning. It wasn't really crucial, so I tried again last night, did the same thing, and this morning.
Mary Allen. I'm sorry. Does U.S. DataNet offer you other numbers to call? In other words, like AOL, you know, you can pick from one of five numbers.
What it sounds like is that you've gotten a bad email from someone.
Oh.
And it's and when the system tries to process it, it's kicking you off.
Okay.
Nobody but the folks at USA DataNet can fix that.
All right. Well, that's fine.
And they may be closed until Tuesday.
Yeah, they may be closed until Tuesday.
I know.
I'm sorry.
It's weird because I can get in for a minute.
Yeah.
You do like one transaction and then
right, and then it catches that if you're fast you can get something in, but that's by that time it's processed that bad one and kicked you off again.
Okay.
Yeah, generally you can use your webmail functions for any internet provider to delete mail like that that gets caught in your mailbox. But
right.
if the webmail is dying
that machine
too,
needs to be cleaned out too.
Right.
So even when I go to delete.
Right.
I can't.
Right. You need to talk to the folks at DataNet.
And
okay.
Mary Ellen, have you also run AdAware, SpyBot, and Stinger?
Oh, good Lord.
It's unlikely that that's the
Don't
problem.
Don't ask me all that.
She's on webmail and it's somewhere else.
But there's a dialer program that'll sit there and try to...
Yeah, but I'd start with that, Mary Ellen. Thanks. Our next caller is Jeff from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Yes, I'm just... very confused about comprehensive security systems. First, what's your opinion of the AVG program?
I love AVG. I run it every day.
Okay. Now, I have a free version. Is that worth anything, or do I need to shell out for the professional version?
The only difference really is some of the scheduling features.
Mm-hmm.
I use the free version on all my machines, and I've been very, very happy.
Okay.
Also, the free version is licensed for non-commercial home use.
Yeah. Right, non-commercial home use.
If you're using it in your business, you must pay for it legally.
Right.
So it is effective.
Oh, very.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, somebody gave me an opinion that said if you don't shell out for the professional version, you're not going to get it.
No.
Okay.
No, as a matter of fact, my folks for the Commission for the Blind,
uh-huh.
That's what we recommend the folks use. Because,
mm-hmm.
one, it's free, it saves them some money,
mm-hmm.
and it protects their machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean,
it's very effective.
We've been using it for over 3 years now.
Okay.
Again, that's for home personal use. If
right.
you're going to use
yeah.
it on a business machine
yes.
or in a business, then you do have to pay for it.
And it's only $40 for a single license.
It's only $40.
License.
Yeah. It's not a lot of money.
Wait, that's the pro version. The
okay.
Soho version is $50 for two licenses.
Right. So, right. yeah, okay. it's not expensive even if you have to pay for it, but it's an excellent product. I'm very impressed.
Mm-hmm. And is there – I have two computers in our house. One is is on Windows XP. And our kid's computer is Windows MEPOS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that is Windows ME just hopeless in terms
yes.
of infection?
Let me say that before Dave gets on his rant. Yes,
you know,
it
you
is
know
hopeless.
What ME stands for?
Millennium.
No, many errors.
Yeah. well, yes, you want to get rid of it. It's just junk.
Really?
You cannot
That's
secure
being polite.
It.
Well, it's as polite as I can. That's as rude as I can get on the air
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you cannot secure it. Updates have been abandoned.
And Gates should be sued over it.
Many programs never worked right under ME.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dump it. If
Neither
you've got enough memory
system.
And you've got a fast enough machine, buy a copy of XP for it. Or give them Linux. I give my daughter Linux, and she can do everything she wants to do, and I never worry about viruses.
Okay, but I mean, is it just a matter of time? Before ME dies?
It's a ticking bomb.
It's already...
ME's already dead.
ME
yeah.
is already gone. There is no support. Matter of fact, 98 Second Edition outlived ME.
Yeah, not only is there no support, but in terms of security, it's a ticking bomb. Get rid of it.
Okay.
No, get out.
I didn't want to... I wanted to hear the first part of that, but I didn't want to hear the second part.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Well, what he does is he goes out and buys a new computer, a little bit bigger and better and faster. He keeps that one... and give the kids his old one.
All right, that'll do it. That'll do it.
And then they can just use the other one for, say, typing or whatever, a school project or that.
Here we go. DOS version 6 support ended November 31st, 2001.
Right, exactly. exactly. So, yeah, it's, it's an interesting problem.
It.
Listen, before we go, we've only got about, what, another minute? 2 minutes, something along that line. Let me talk a little bit about what goes on our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you. Every week, we have a poll. This week's poll is about your email program. Which email program do you use? Currently, Thunderbird, I'm delighted to say, is out in the lead. Unfortunately, followed by Outlook Express. Eudora's next. So please vote in the poll. When you're done with the poll, please join us on the rest of the website. We're done for another week at Sports Time. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I expect Rob Linton will be back. I want to thank Dan and Brendan, who are phenomenal today, keeping us on track. I'm Nick Francesco. We will all be back here next week on the greatest computer show in the known universe, 16 years young, Soundbites, on 1180 WHAM.